Hey there, it's Dr. Nazanin Mo'oli, and I want to chat with you about a key ingredient for a fabulous date night, feeling sexy. And come on, let's be real. What you wear plays a big part in how you rock that confidence. That's why I'm thrilled to introduce you to Quince. Quince brings you premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts starting at just $30, along with washable silk tops, 40-karat gold jewelry, and more. And guess what? All of their goodies are priced 50 to 80% lower than similar brands. By teaming up directly with top factories, Quince skipped the middleman and hands us the saving. Plus, they stick to factories with safe, ethical practices and top-notch fabrics and finishes. How awesome is that? Picking from Quince's website was tough, because they have a ton of fabulous choices. I ended up going for their 100% washable silk sleep dress in champagne. And let me tell you, my husband was floored. He's convinced whoever rocks this is in for a blast. I'm going to record some content on that dress so you can see how fabulous is that dress. Elevate your date night style with Quince. Pop over to quince.com/sexology for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/sexology to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/sexology.
Welcome to Sexology, a podcast that untangles the science of sex and pleasure. And now, with this week's episode, your host, clinical psychologist, Dr. Nazanin Mo'oli.
Hello there, I'm Dr. Nazanin Mo'oli, and you're listening to episode 378 of Sexology Podcast. This is the third episode in our sexual health series and middle life. The first one, we talked about age gap relationships. Second one, we talked about body image, self-image. And now we're talking about how couple can make sure that they have great sex life, like when they are reaching different stages of life. That's a question that I often get a lot from my client. Is it possible to have a good sex life when you're 40, 50, 60 and above? And I always tell people that as long as you're investing in your sex life, you will have a great sexual experience as regardless of the age. So today we're going to talk about tips and tricks, things that you need to adjust. We're going to talk about some myths and how you can incorporate all of the strategies we're talking about to make sure you have an exciting sex life, regardless of what stage you are with your partner. Our guest is Dr. Matthews. Dr. Matthews is a board certified OBGYN, minimally invasive gynecologic surgery, and NAMS certified menopause specialist. As both a mother and wife herself, her goal is to help women of all ages maintain their own quality of life while keeping up with day-to-day needs of their families and careers. She has a very impressive CV and bio. So if you're curious to learn more about her, make sure you're heading to our show notes. Before we go to our interview today, I wanted to share a free resource that we have on our website. I know many women, they struggle with learning about their desire, reviving their sex drive. And if you belong to that group, regardless of what age you are, I wrote a free book a few years ago, and it's on my website. We'll leave a link in the show notes to that. And the title of the book is Women's Guide to Reviving Sex Drive. I hope you find it helpful. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Dr. Matthews. Hello there. Welcome back to another episode of Sexology Podcast. I am so excited to welcome Dr. Shama Matthews. Dr. Shama, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am very excited to have you on the show. I know that you have a breadth and depth of experience when it comes to women's sexual health and wellness. And this month, we're doing a series on kind of premenopausal, menopausal experience of women and their couple, their partner, and how can the partner stop support them. So can you start with telling us what are some activities and practices couples can adopt to deepen their bond during these years?
So it's important to kind of remember the changes that happen with menopause, right? I feel like not just women, but of course, men as well, many times are not aware of the changes that can happen. So hormonally, there's a lot of shifts going on, and that can actually impact the vaginal tissue, the dryness, the lubricant, et cetera. And then also the areas of sensitivity can kind of change as well. Our anatomy changes a little bit. So it's important to kind of be patient with that, take that into account, be willing and open potentially to use things to kind of enhance the experience, whether it's lubricants or potentially sex toys or whatever else that might be important to kind of help kind of figure out what are the new points of stimulation, you know, and what really kind of reaches it. And patience is important too, as far as understanding it might take a little bit longer to climax, might take a little bit longer to, you know, achieve enough lubrication or wetness to kind of continue in the foreplay. So being able to explore that and also focusing on the foreplay part of it, I think is a lot of fun and important to engage.
I 100% agree that sometimes people think that their sex life has an expiration point, and they think about, okay, post-menopause, women are not interested. The partner think about, like, you know, that chapter is closed, and there can be some disappointment around that because people don't know how to adopt this new chapter of their lives. And I think such a great point that you're saying that as people go through different stages, their partner also goes through some changes. So it would be helpful to have some conversations to kind of like to make sure that everyone's needs are getting met. So can you tell us some of the myth that you hear about premenopause and postmenopausal kind of women?
Sure. And you just touched on the main one that I bring up all the time, that for some reason that our sex life ends. It's not, you're not supposed to desire sex afterwards. You shouldn't desire it. It's shameful to do it. It's not, it's just that chapter, that book is closed. And there's a narrative around that that's sort of there, right? One, it's sort of fed into by, you know, clinicians that will kind of dismiss a woman's concerns about changes in their anatomy and like dryness and pain with sex. And that's really unfortunate that a lot of people do that when a woman does take the step to admit that that's what's going on and is kind of seeking help, right? So there's that myth that's perpetuated, one, by our own kind of, you know, clinician route, and then also just amongst each other as well. We joke about it. There's humorous jokes about it, you know, about not wanting to be intimate and not wanting to be sexually active. And I feel like we need to get away from that. We need to really sort of re-educate around that. And there's also a myth that there's no options. There's nothing to do. This is just what it is. It's your lot in life. This is what's going to happen. And that's not true either. We have so many options available to us, whether it's products that are available over the counter, prescriptions that are available. And there are doctors, providers that are willing to discuss this with you and your partner. So not just for the woman, but of course, other changes that are physically happening to a man as well, that could also be addressed. And yes, you're right. Having a conversation surrounding that to make that like an open discussion, making sure both people are on the same page about where to prioritize this. That's all, you know, very relevant.
I agree with you. And I think if you're thinking about kind of if sex is painful, like it's something that you don't enjoy and you're not haven't updated the script yet, of course, that impacts the desire. And I hear that like from the physiological perspective, that also desire has been impacted. So you said there are a number of different options to address it. And I hear about a lot of different medical interventions, and I'm a psychologist, so I don't know about them. What are some of the like top three interventions that like women who are struggling with changes in the anatomy or pain, they can implement like very soon?
Absolutely. So first, I often start with just what's available to you over the counter, right? Which you can absolutely access on your own. So anything that will improve the moisture and balance the pH of the anatomy. So products such as a good quality lubricant, and we can talk about that a bit of depth later, what options are available there. So lubricant every time. Lubricant doesn't mean there's something wrong. Lubricant can be fun. Lubricant can be like part of the experience and even enhance pleasure, right? So it shouldn't feel like, oh, something's broken and I'm trying to fix it. No, it's part of that enhancement to make the process smoother. There are also pH balancing. They're called vaginal moisturizers. It's a different category. A lubricant you would use at the time of intercourse or intimacy. A moisturizer is something that you use regularly, twice a week, internally, externally, around the vagina and vulva to help improve the pH balance, because that's one of the things that change with the hormone changes that happen around menopause. So that's another thing that can kind of help boost the healthier environment and make sex less painful. Probiotics, there are probiotics specifically designed for vaginal health. So something like that also meant to balance the pH. On the prescription side, vaginal estrogen, and I know estrogen is sort of like a dirty word these days, right? Like hormone therapy is so bad for you. That's not true. One, hormone therapy is an absolute safe option for many women who don't have risk factors, which is a majority of them. And vaginal estrogen is safe for almost everyone because it's locally absorbed in the vagina and it absolutely replenishes the estrogen levels to that tissue, which is so sensitive. So something as simple as using a cream or an ovule twice a week can help replenish that right away. So right there, you know, you've got options. And then I would tell you that sex should not be painful. It should never be painful. So don't just accept that it's painful. Seek help for that, because that also sets off a cascade that once you find that it's painful, it's uncomfortable, you don't desire it anymore. Why would you want to engage sexually, right? So that also affects your psychologic kind of mindset about it, your libido about it. So all of these things start creating a cascade. And then not only that, it's painful. And then you brace and it becomes more painful. So it becomes a bigger process that you have to undo. Whereas if you're able to approach it right off the bat and try to fix it and try to get ahead of it.
And I think the key point for many of our listeners, getting ahead of it, right? Kind of thinking about what can I do? What kind of conversation we can have? What are some of the interventions that I can think about? And I think you talked about probiotics. Something that's very interesting, I recently heard about it. I know that historically, we were taught that douches are bad for you. But I heard there are douches that have probiotic. Is that something that like you guys recommend?
That's a newer sort of concept. That's not typically what douching was about. And yes, generally speaking, you're right. We don't recommend douches in general. And I'm not very familiar with the newer ones that might contain probiotics to be able to say I recommend them. And the reason is the vaginal environment has a microbiome to it. There's a balance of bacteria and yeast that are supposed to live there. So you don't want to completely wipe all that free, right? So the idea behind the probiotics, particularly that contain lactobacilli, which is one of the healthy bacteria that live in the vagina, that can be consumed by a capsule orally where you're not impacting the whole, you know, balance of everything there. So that's usually the route that I typically recommend. But yeah, that could be an interesting thing that, you know, we may be able to look into more.
It's interesting because that's like, as like I say more in the field, I discovered and we're updating the information, because I was like the other day talking about how douching is bad and someone was like saying that the probiotic douches are the new thing. So, but it seems like the jury's out as far as like, how do we want to kind of like explore that, experiment with it. And sometimes when women struggle with pain and they use estrogen creams and different strategies, sometimes they talk about different medical intervention for vaginal atrophy. How successful are those interventions?
So there is some newer data starting to come out about the vaginal, certain vaginal treatments, like for example, laser treatments, fractionated laser treatments. That therapy's been around for some time. There were some smaller studies, but not a lot of bigger studies that were there. The smaller studies did actually show some improvement of the cell layers and the moisture production and the pH levels once they were used. I would tell you that, one, it's not for everyone. Two, meaning you may not always respond to it. Two, one of the biggest hurdles is that insurance doesn't always cover it. And three, I really recommend finding a provider is well-versed in it. This is like something that they very much focus on to be able to handle any complications or issues that might arise and counsel you appropriately about what to expect. So I do think that is an avenue, an area of the field that we should be focusing on, you know, especially because it's a non-hormonal option, and particularly patients who have really struggled with other things like topical options on how can they bypass that. I have a lot of faith in it, but I'm still hoping that more and more, you know, access is there for people.
And I think you brought up such an important point about pain. Unfortunately, there are so many women, even like before perimenopausal years, that they think like it's okay, or it's kind of like expected for sex to be uncomfortable or at times painful. It's such a common experience for women. And I think like you're at the borderline of the threshold. And if things slightly change, then it's become intolerable. So I love that you talked about like, regardless of where you are, you don't want to experience pain. And I think it can impact the partners as well. So of course, you should do it for yourself and never kind of think about other people as much. But also I heard like there are studies that talk about erectile unpredictability in partners because of like experiencing their female partners struggling with pain.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I hear that a lot too, where they're like, oh, you know, I it's uncomfortable, it's painful, but now it's impacting our intimacy because he doesn't want to hurt me. And he can see that I'm, you know, tightening up or bracing or not enjoying it. And then that impacts his ability to perform or to engage as well, to really kind of commit to it. So I completely see that. I think that's a very important point about not, you know, pushing through the pain. You're right. It's like a societal expectation for some reason. And that is complete like lie. It should not happen. And we have resources too often, like I said, these agents as far as improving lubrication and balancing pH, vaginal estrogen. Often if the sort of cycle has started with pelvic floor dysfunction and tightening of the muscles, many times I'll recommend things like dilator therapy and pelvic floor physical therapy. I cannot tell you how much I believe in PT. For women of all ages at all points in their life, I find that it can be such an eye-opening experience. And that's such an underutilized resource as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I truly believe in physical therapy. And I equally at times like the dilator ideas, but I think people are less consistent with that, right? So if you have an appointment with a physical therapist, like most likely you're going to show up. But I think like if you're knowing that it's your schedule on your own, that's harder to kind of stick to.
Absolutely. Especially for busy women, that's usually the biggest, you know, downfall as far as compliance goes. I agree. I often tell women, you know, the vaginal walls, you're talking about dealing with muscle. And just like any exercise and you know, a regimen that you want to do, you do it yourself, you may get some results, you may have some commitment back and forth. You do it with a trainer, you'll see more results because they're going to teach you and give you feedback. And the feedback component is actually well studied to show, you know, a good improvement.
Such a beautiful analogy. I'm going to borrow it in future, like trainer versus like doing it on your own. And I think it's very powerful that as part of this conversation at times, it seems like the partner is also part of the conversation. Because I think when it's a team approach, oftentimes we get better results. What are some of the common complaints that you hear from couples that like lead them to make an appointment, have a conversation with the provider?
This kind of thing, particularly when there's sort of lack of education, lack of understanding about what's going on. I often do encourage them to bring their partner in to talk about it a little more, to gain a bit more information. I love when couples come just as couples because, you know, you can tell that they're trying to support each other. And I can tell you that when a woman who's going through this has a supportive partner who's willing to kind of engage in dilator therapy with them, or, you know, understands the importance of the foreplay and things of that nature to improve the experience and takes that patience with them, they're going to have greater success than if they're sort of afraid to share that this is, you know, something that they're going through. So absolutely, I think that's one of the things that brings people as a couple, is that they really want to, you know, focus on this and work together to improve it.
How wonderful that people you mentioned that at times are proactive, they're kind of like coming in to have these conversations. And we talked a little bit about lubricants. So, and there's just like a galaxy of options out there. Like I personally, when I open any closet, like tons of lubricants come at me. And I know they're all not equal as far as the quality, as far as like the goodness of fit for women. How can we choose the right lubricant, especially for women who are like premenopausal and menopausal?
So again, lubricant, you're right. There's so many options. And I will tell you, for a long time, there weren't enough options. Mm. And there were actually very limited options for a long time. And they were not really focused on a woman's body and body chemistry at all, right? I mean, there are so many female products that were designed in a certain way and then never updated for decades. And this is definitely a huge category on that. So now, for sure, we have a lot more options. Full disclosure, I'm a medical advisor for one particular company called Playground, and I think they are fantastic because they were formulated by women, keeping this in mind, understanding that what don't we want? We don't want to use a lubricant and then wake up with a UTI or wake up with a vaginal infection or irritation or a stickiness or odor, make them feel uncomfortable or unclean. So keeping that as part of the design, as far as what kind of products are they using, what kind of ingredients are they using, avoiding certain synthetic ingredients that don't really fit with our bodies, and then also using a lot of natural components as well to help kind of balance that pH. So keeping those, you know, this, the thoughtfulness behind it is really what I think is so important. And that's why I got involved with them specifically. And that's what you want to look for.
Well, I'm excited to hear that it seems like it's a newer kind of approach with Sexex, that there are more options for women. And you know what, when I think about lubricant, I remember back in college, I wasn't exposed to all of these options. I was like grabbing something from the drugstore. I was like, okay, it's good enough. But now I feel like I'm a lubricant consumer. Like wine, my taste is, well, I don't know, because my anatomy changed, you know, or it's because I've been exposed to so many greater options. Like, you know, when you're in college, you have boxed wine and you think that's fantastic. And now you know the difference.
And you know, you want another great analogy. I mean, skincare. How much has your skincare routine changed as we've gotten older and we've gotten more sort of discerning about our options that are there and what fits us, right? I mean, it should be part of a regimen just like that, to choose a lubricant that fits our bodies, right? So taking that kind of care and investment into something that's a good product is really going to go a long way.
How much do you think it's like, I think generally okay, kind of like to have flavors in lube. So I think there's just so many options, or CBD, and full disclosure, I talk about, like, I got into a sex therapy world because I had dyspareunia. So, and now I'm very mindful of, like, I haven't had painful sex for 20 years. I'm very Amazing. Mindful of like what I'm putting on my body. So what should people be mindful, especially if they're more vulnerable during the menopausal years?
So I would say, you know, I don't mind the idea of like flavors or CBD particularly. I think actually CBD is a great, there's a lot of potential there. I love that that's something that we can start engaging in and using, and particularly the vaginal mucosa is a good absorber of these components. But for that same reason, you have to be mindful too. So if you're someone that is generally sensitive, I would say stick with things that are a little bit cleaner, more simple, you know. Scents are nice because that can be something that enhances the as well. I mean, you're using all of your senses during intercourse, so that enhances intimacy in some ways too, more than flavors would, I would think, in some ways. And then, yeah, I think there are things that we're learning more and more about as far as how our bodies respond. But yes, I think it's important to make sure that again, that thoughtfulness is there about making sure you're not disrupting pH, that you're not throwing things off in a negative direction, that you want to keep things positive, because again, you don't want to spiral that out of control or add to the problem.
When people are in your office and thinking about sexual enhancement, I think lubricants are such a great, it's a must have for everyone, regardless 100%. Of what kind of a lifestyle you have. But beside that, today people ask about sex toys. Are there certain sex toys that you recommend for people? So tell us more about that.
No, not specifically. I mean, I think sometimes that takes a little experimenting. I mentioned before, you know, our anatomy changes. And so many times I'll often point out to women too that, you know, how you climax may change, right? As far as like an internal development of an orgasm versus climaxing with external stimulation and kind of figuring some of that out. I think sex toys and sort of self-exploration is a great way to figure out what's different about your anatomy, how you can achieve that. And sharing that with your partner. That could be a personal kind of venture, or that could be something that you do together. So sex toys, I think there are tons of good ones as far as like in and out. I think it's whatever works for you.
I agree with you. There's a galaxy of options with sex toys, thankfully, right now as well. And it's just a matter of people experimenting and kind of like being intentional about where it's produced, because I know it can be tricky if there are not as many regulation. I hear that some of them, they have kind of like a toxic kind of products, but that's not the case for a majority of things that we get like from the stores and adult stores in the US. What about techniques? Do you find that like changing positions is helpful? Some positions are less painful?
Absolutely. I mean, again, as you mentioned with dyspareunia, right? So some women will have more discomfort externally, others will have it deeper. So yes, differences in position can be helpful. Again, spending that time on foreplay and being able to kind of build up to penetration so that that's not something that is as alarming or stressful, right? So your body's almost prepared for that. I think having that patience is also important. So yeah, definitely experimenting with some of those things is helpful.
Excellent. So what resources or approaches would you recommend for men to better understand the kind of this chapter of women's life and their couplehood and relationship?
I agree. I wish there were a lot of good resources. I mean, I think one for, it kind of starts with one for the woman having maybe a supportive provider. So many times I recommend menopause.org. It's the Menopause Society of North America that they have a provider database where you can actually search for certified menopause providers. And typically those are clinicians, OBGYNs, nurse practitioners, whoever, that are educated and certified in the changes that happen with menopause and often more open and educated to talk about these topics. So to set up a consultation to discuss it, you know, one-on-one, I think that's a great option. They'll often have resources as well for psychologists, sex therapists as well, that you could also sit down together and learn more for it. So I often use that resource myself because there's a lot to explore there too, right? Not just the physical. There's also what else is going on in one's life. It's often a time where there's a lot of change, whether it's because of, you know, career changes, family changes, aging parents, kids leaving the house. I mean, there's so much going on for up when we're all going through this change at the same time that you kind of have to take that time apart. So finding providers, finding support that is going to be educational and open to discussion and, you know, kind of taking that time to sit down and say, okay, yeah, we're going to make this a priority. Let's do this together.
I love that there are resources out there, kind of like validating that you can have wonderful sexual experiences. I think it's important to know that like men can be part of the treatment as well and there are options there. Because one thing that you mentioned that was fantastic was when people kind of have this mindset that sometimes our kids are out of the house and now is the perfect opportunity for us to rekindle the passion. And now like they didn't have established sex life and now when they want to create it and with the partner is going through phases, I think it's important to kind of have a kind of strategic approach as a couple. And I think also part of the pressure, it comes with the idea of like women's youth, right? Like you're only desirable if you're young and that can create kind of like hesitation, reservation for women to openly discuss these things.
I absolutely agree. And I think that's also part of, you know, that transition and time period with menopause. Again, you know, your body's changing, your metabolism is changing. That often brings a lot of hesitancy, fear, you know, it's a crisis of confidence for many women. So kind of reestablishing some of that, I think, is also part of that journey, figuring out what it is that you need to feel healthy and well, self-love to know that you can get past that. And there is that aspect of it too, I think. So, it, you know, your partner can reflect it to you, but if you don't feel it yourself, you aren't really going to, you know, bring that back.
I love that. So any other misunderstanding you think our male listeners, they have about menopause that would be important for them to kind of examine?
I think, like you said, you know, it's like trying to rekindle that. Women are not an on and off switch. I think many men learn that, but I don't know that all of them learn how to kindle, how to do the things that can help, you know, foster that intimacy. So this is a time more than any other that I think that this during this transition where you may have to explore other things and it may, you know, not always necessarily result in sex or intimacy necessarily, but it's building blocks towards confidence building, trust, you know, kind of re-exploring that relationship. I often tell them, you know, listen, if you're going through your laundry list of things that you have to do and taking care of everyone else, sex never falls in our priority list. So you have to make time for it. You have to create time and space for it. So from a male listener's standpoint, help her create those opportunities. If that's whether it's like allowing her to have some self-time to go get a massage or, you know, exercise with her friends or whatever it might be, or saying, you know what, I'd love to take you out to dinner. Let's go for a date night. Let's get away for the weekend. Let's put all of our, you know, our laundry list of to-dos aside and really just kind of spend time with each other like we used to before all this, you know, got out of control. So I'd be like, these kinds of things are often we forget or we take for granted because we may have been, especially for people who are in a long-term relationship. I feel like that gets kind of lost. And so it's a time to reignite some of that.
Absolutely. And you mentioned longer foreplay. And sometimes people, I hate that when we use the foreplay term, right? Like kind of people think that's something that kind of like we do before the main event. But yes. I think with the kind of like we're thinking about is cultivating erotic energy. That can make the quote unquote main event even hotter and more fun and kind of bring this kind of more element of novelty. Because if you've been with your partner for years, I know for many women, changing the script can do magic with kind of like helping them be experiencing more desire and kind of like having kind of creating this shared erotic story can be very sexy.
I absolutely agree with you. And I think that's part of the fun too. You're right. It does. And that's what I mean. It doesn't always have to result in the main event. I mean, you can give each other massages. You can, you know, just experiment with touch, you know, different sensations, different whatever it is. And just kind of explore that. And you're right. I think that that is something that awakens different energies within us that are often dormant when we have other things on our plate.
Well, Dr. Sharma, I really enjoyed our conversation. It's wonderful that we got an opportunity to talk with a gynecologist that just like so kind of have this mindset of holistic approach, right? And kind of like invested in women's health and journey kind of in different stages of life. So if our listeners are there interested to learn more about you, about your practice, about Playground, what are some of the places they can go?
Sure. So I'll start with Playground. You can visit helloplayground.com. And there is actually a section there called Office Hours with Dr. Sharma that allows for some questionings, some blog posts, so some education surrounding all of this, as well as some amazing products, which I think are a lot of fun. Explore it with your partner, explore it by yourself. I mean, there's just a lot of things there that I feel like just kind of taps into this fun energy surrounding sexual wellness that I think really should be there. And then my own website is drmatthewsgyn.com. And then my Instagram handle is drmatthewsgyn as well.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I'll make sure that we'll include a link to all of those wonderful resources you mentioned. And I hope we have you in future episodes.
Thank you so much again for having me. This was such a pleasure and so much fun to talk with you.
Thank you. Hope you guys found our conversation useful. If you find this topic interesting, make sure you are subscribing to our show so you can listen to the entire interviews in this series. I have 3 more very exciting interviews coming up. You don't want to miss it. And the way that we decided to talk about this topic was based on the survey that you guys have completed. So if you have a topic in mind that we haven't addressed, make sure to head over our show notes and complete the 5-minute survey. And it helps us a lot with curating a content that's relevant to you. Because I talk about a lot of things in the world of sexual health, but I want to make sure that I'm serving my audience. So it's on you to tell me what would be helpful. And I can't wait to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening, subscribing, sending your love and positive energy to me. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Sexology Podcast. For more great content, visit www.sexologypodcast.com. Please be advised that information presented on this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health provider.